The 2008 election saw record turnout from young voters. This year, though, more of them are sitting this one out, watching from the sidelines or not watching at all. On the other hand, interest in the Republican Party has grown for young adults, with a corresponding fall for Democrats. But with a huge number of voters under 30, even a 2% increase in voter turnout could change the election. Good morning, I'm Veronica Rickert, and I'm glad to be with you today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm in today for Kathleen Dunn. This morning, we'll check in with two party activists from colleges in Wisconsin. But first, why we should care whether young people get involved in shaping the world around them. Our first guest this morning is Craig Kielbauer. He's the author of The World Needs Your Kid, How to Raise Children Who Care and Contribute. And of course, we're happy to take your phone call. How do you think we convince young people today to get involved? And what's at stake in the coming midterms if young voters sit it out? Our number is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, and our email is talk@wpr.org. And Craig Kielbauer, so glad you could join us today.
Truly my pleasure. Thanks so much.
Well, there is a quote that you use in your book by the Dalai Lama. And to paraphrase, he's essentially saying that the greatest problem in the world is that parents are raising passive bystanders. Their children are standing by instead of getting involved. In your words, what do you think he meant by that?
Well, it was inspired by a gathering. When I was 12 years old, I started an organization called Free the Children. 14 invited to this gathering of 30 individuals that were locked in a room for a week discussing this very question of what is the greatest challenge facing our time, and looked at everything from, you know, global hunger to war and violence to environmental degradation, but kept coming to the conclusion that we have a lot of the technology or the means to address these challenges, but so often we lack the will. And he said it was parents who, in a natural gut reaction, and any parent listening will understand this, to protect kids from the violence and the poverty and the suffering, they often indirectly close their eyes to it. They'll turn the page on the newspaper. They'll walk past the homeless person, often because parents don't know how to get their kids engaged. They don't know those age-appropriate actions. It's easier simply sometimes to tell them to look away. Someone else will solve it, not to worry about it. And when you close your eyes, indirectly often you close your heart.
Hmm. So what is the solution then to children that are raised this way? What do we do instead?
Well, that was the passion and interest in what we spent the past 4 years researching for this book, and spoke to more than 300 child developmental psychologists and parents and young people and everyone from Mandela to, you know, great social change makers of our time. And we want to humbly put forward, instead of just the three R's that we know, the reading, writing, arithmetic, The World Needs Your Kid advances what we call the three C's, compassion, courage, and community, and raising children who are compassionate. So parents consciously carving out the time, just as important as sports or academics, raising compassionate children, courageous children, so they can follow their values. How do you help them find their gifts to share? And last but not least, community. How do you create, through the school support networks, through the media they consume, through their peer groups, how do you create opportunities for kids to really become engaged in their community? So the long and short of it is, you know, just as parents have bumper stickers saying, my child's valedictorian, or my child is captain of the football team, we need bumper stickers that say, my child cares. Mm. We need to create a cultural shift in that way.
Well, in the 2008 election in this country, as I'm sure you were watching, there was a massive turnout of young voters. People under age 30 were really fired up. They really cared. And the election pivoted on them. And that was a wild card. People talk about that as almost this sort of legendary thing that happened and that probably isn't repeatable. When it comes to politics, is that part of what you're talking about? Or do you think that courage, compassion, what you're talking about, that should be mainly dealt with outside the political arena?
I think it's both, absolutely both. And the critical element is, you know, people look at the voter turnout number, and of course, you know, there's a lot of fascination around that. The question, how do you engage young people? You know, do you do fancy rock concerts? Do you get out the vote pushes? But in many ways, it's almost too late by that point. you know, young people don't suddenly turn 18, develop a social conscience and decide to give back to their community, to go vote, to become engaged in civic affairs, to run for office, to help make that type of contribution. What we're fascinated by is that young person when they're 10, when they're 12, you know, the early childhood indicators around voting are things like if you're willing to read the newspaper. And there's a huge correlation between young people who are exposed to news at a young age and their ability to get out and vote. You know, studies show these amazing connections that exist along these lines. And so what we try to do is work in schools, work about 3,500 schools to provide these type of opportunities at the youngest of ages for students to get involved. You know, so for parents who want to raise that next generation of voters, well, you know, the Archbishop Desmond Tutu wrote a beautiful section in The World Needs Your Kid where he talked about how the newspaper he saw every day, not as a collection of all the violence and the poverty that we so often consider it to be, but instead he saw it as God's to-do list delivered right to our front doors.
Oh, wow.
An opportunity for parents to start a conversation. If they don't know how to bridge this with their kids, something as simple as the newspaper, laying it out on the kitchen table, seeing it as a menu of options. You know, if you want to talk to your kids about local issues, it's the first couple of pages, national issues midway through, international right at the end. But those simple things are how we raise young people who are going to care and contribute later on in life and become those engaged citizens and voters.
Well, it's interesting because the newspaper can be a scary place. There are stories of violent crimes and problems which present social quandaries that are really complicated. And parents might not even know how to think about those issues sometimes themselves, let alone talking through them with their children. How do you suggest kind of cracking that nut?
Well, we put forward a simple equation. And it's we humbly think, the most important equation they never teach in school. And it's issue plus gift equals better world. Whenever your young people are exposed to an issue that might overwhelm them, and you're absolutely right, I know parents, and you know, we do now parenting workshops with this, the book, and there are a lot of parents out there who exactly say what you say. And we say it's not just a question of showing them it, not just a question of exposing them to the poverty, but that issue they have, matching it with their gift, what they can do to help. So, you know, if it's a young person and they've seen the war in Iraq or Afghanistan, making cards that they can hand make and send to troops, or you know, it's the proverbial jar of loose change that you can bring out to a local organization, or if you see a homeless person, cleaning your closet for a cause, reaching out to help that way. You know, one of the scariest things for parents often is homelessness. It's something that's around us every day, panhandlers. And I'll never forget how my own mother dealt with it. And it's a simple thing that I didn't even realize at the time how powerful a lesson it was. Whenever she would see someone who was homeless on the streets, she would walk up to them. She would, you know, hand over a few coins, so whatever was, you know, around her pocket or purse. And in those 30 seconds or those 20 seconds it took to find the spare change, she would ask them their name. You know, how are they? How long they've been sleeping on the streets? Mm. Maybe a very simple exchange. And it was only years later that I told her how much I admired that about her, how she was, how I saw it, nice to these people. And she looked at me and she said that the real reason she did that was for my brother and I. So we wouldn't just walk by. We would acknowledge that person's humanity, hear that he or she has a name. You know, sometimes it's taking those moments and making them a teachable moment instead through very simple actions. Again, that gift that you give in the holidays to someone who may not receive one, you know, putting family volunteer time into the calendar. It's consciously creating as part of the family values. And in our rushed society, what it's easy to focus on the academics, it's easy to focus on sports, but consciously creating opportunities as a family to start looking at giving back, what are the values, and how do we nurture kids to care?
And you were saying earlier that you have to start this early on. You just can't expect your kids to dive into the deep end and be excited about it when they're 18.
Absolutely. You know, in the programming that we run in schools, and we work with 350,000 students creating curriculum resources and speaking tours, and 2,000 kids go on volunteer trips with us overseas. But we start at 8 years old. And there's a lot of youth-friendly actions. Like, for example, just this weekend, we do something called Halloween for Hunger. So for the parents out there who are wondering, well, how do I get my kids involved? Here's a very simple but powerful action. Kids, when they go trick-or-treating, we ask them to say not only trick-or-treat, but also and food to eat. It's a campaign that runs mostly in California and some of the states and the Eastern Seaboard throughout Canada. And it's kids go sliding notes in the day before, a couple days before, letting homes know that they're collecting non-perishable food for local food banks. Parents escort the kids because it gets really heavy to carry it. And then they bring it together to local food banks. And it's a simple action. It's an easy action. Sometimes people don't feel comfortable handing over money. We, you know, a lot of people used to carry those boxes around. But handing non-perishable food to local food banks is a great way to get involved and support your local community. Kids can start at the youngest of ages on this journey. And everyone, and you know, in our programming schools that we work with, and everyone who we work with child development psychologists, show that you need to start this at the youngest of ages, because children need to define their self-identity in this way, not by the peer group they have, but instead the self-identity of what they can contribute to society.
So it sounds like you're describing being really proactive about it, not just opening the paper and looking at the issues with your child, but helping them see what they can do about it, so that you don't look at these issues and feel just overwhelmed in the face of all the suffering that there is in the world.
And that's really the key word, being proactive. You know, the book The World Needs Your Kid, when we wrote it, at first, very naively, now we've run programming in 3,500 American schools now for 15 years. And whenever we walk into the parenting aisles, we see a ton of resources out there on, you know, getting your child into Harvard, or the next great, you know, violinist, soloist, or, you know, how to encourage your child on so many issues, and especially also dealing with some of the negatives when adolescents experience challenges, you know, how to reach out to reach young boys and, you know, to reach young women who might experience challenges in their life. We were stunned to see there aren't books on raising compassionate children and what that tells us about our culture. That, you know, we live in a self-help culture that values certain things and puts energy in certain areas, but not in consciously carving out the opportunity, partially because I think that we have the belief that somehow children will, by osmosis, start to care. You know, but the decline of traditional faith groups, the changing nature of family dynamics with parents, you know, both working and sometimes working two jobs, kids need to consciously have these opportunities. It has to be proactive. And so it's carving out those type of opportunities. It's having the conversations. And as a family, really being there to engage in this together. It's the most powerful people in the world, I deeply believe, they're not politicians. With due respect to whoever, you know, gets elected in the House and the Senate, they're not politicians because they come and go. You know, and they're not CEOs. We saw the past 2 years Wall Street come to its knees, but parents, and we don't celebrate this role of parents enough. They're the next, you know, they're the greatest leaders because they shape how kids look at the world, how they're going to vote and philanthropy and volunteer and get involved. And it's a huge responsibility, but they're the ones who are the great holders of civil society. They're the ones who are the great shapers of a generation. And so we're trying to put this out as a call to action to say to parents, the world does need your kid. And they really need to help nurture their young people to give back and to get engaged.
Well, let me ask you then. You said you didn't see any books on the shelves about raising compassionate children. Would you say that compassion is a value that is in trouble or in crisis right now, especially among younger generations?
I would say it is absolutely. You know, again, with the decline of traditional faiths, you know, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, a lot of civil society groups that, you know, kids used to be signed up to en masse, with membership declining, with, you know, parents not necessarily carving up this time together, that's been something that's been cut out because, you know, in an age where schools, and again, we work in 3,500 schools, they value standardized testing, compassion doesn't fit in a box that you can scribble with a black pen. And so it's recognizing that this is something so incredibly important. It's incredibly important for what you identified, you know, voter turnout, civil society participation, but it's incredibly important for the young person, him or herself. Like the University of Virginia, for example, did an extraordinary study where they tracked high school students who were involved in service. One group had a spare, and one group had a structured volunteer program that brought this into the classrooms. By the end of their high school career, by the end of grade 12, the students who volunteered not only got higher grades, were more likely to go into post-secondary education, but they also were less likely to use or abuse drugs. Hmm. It lowered rates of teen pregnancy, and it boosted self-esteem. And in an age where so often kids are just adults in waiting, we see this. You know, we see this all the time, in serious ways and in almost humorous ways. When we bring volunteer trips overseas, we have 2,000 kids who, high school students, spend their summers with us building schools and volunteering in developing countries, mostly young women. And when they come back through the airports, a lot of them borrow calling cards, and they call their parents, and they thank them for this volunteer trip, and it's very sweet. And a lot of them call their boyfriends to dump them from the airports. even before they get back home. And you know, in a small sort of way, maybe it's symbolic of the fact that a lot of kids, they realize what's really important to them. It's not, you know, their boyfriend or girlfriends or the clothes they wear, or so many other ways how they define their self-identity. But in an age where kids, and especially in North America, are really just adults in waiting, you know, it's giving them something that they can define themselves with, and in a very positive way. And that's something that's so incredibly important, and it's lacking in our society.
Well, let's take a phone call now. We have Rich joining us from Sullivan. Hi, Rich.
Hi. I really like that phrase, adults in waiting, because I think we sometimes ask kids, what do you want to be when you grow up? And while we're doing this with kids, I think it's very important that we don't sadden them, that we don't overwhelm them, that we really see our part of the jigsaw puzzle of life as sufficient for contributing to the whole picture. And I just wanted to share that one of the best lessons I got on selfishness and, you know, looking toward others was from my mom. I once called her stupid way back when I was a kid, and she said, "What do you mean?" I said, "You're foolish. You give this away to this person, you give that away to that person." And she said, "Oh, you think I do that for them?" And then she gave me this big smile, and I was stopped in my tracks because she didn't say anything else about it, but what she basically was saying was, look, I'm making a world here for myself, and I don't want to live in a world.
Oh, I'm sorry we lost Rich there. Maybe he was on his cell phone, but I think we got most of his comments. Craig, did you want to comment?
I couldn't agree more. And it's parents have all this behavior. Conversations with parents, you know, and often they'll say, well, you know, we want to get our child engaged. We're having some trouble, you know, starting this. Well, in the words of Mahatma Gandhi, it truly is be the change you want to see in the world. It's consciously carving out that time. It's taking the family calendar. It's putting it just as important as PTA or soccer practice, that time as a family to have this conscious conversation. And I couldn't agree more with that beautiful idea of parents modeling it quiet, humbly, not preaching, but just nudging along gently.
Well, thank you to Rich for that call. And one more from Christina in Reedstown. Welcome, Christina.
Hi. I was just calling because I had recently, I think on one of the networks, I had heard a study that had been done, or else they were commenting on the decline of empathy among children now. And I just wondered is this a study that's been done, or is this just a thing we think is happening? And I just wanted to say I think it's really a great, great, I love what you're saying, and I'm just so excited to get kids involved in this kind of thing.
All right. Well, thank you for your call, Christina. And Craig, the decline in compassion you were talking about, the decline in empathy, is there research to go behind
that? Absolutely. Oh, my goodness. There, it's been actually a fascination for an extended period of time tracking empathy on a series of levels. But one of the most interesting is done by UCLA, where they track empathetic levels on entering freshmen. And they track it on a series of indicators. And to say that empathy is declining, it's a lofty idea. So what does that mean in practice? A lot of people would say, well, an interesting one is part of that study, they also track your willingness to get involved in, for example, various forms of civic participation and what values are most important to you, including on things like earning a lot of money. And that necessarily, that, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to say that it's an either or, but when you rank by a hierarchy entering freshmen, the values around civic participation, making a difference in my community, or making a lot of money, back in the 70s, you've seen a rocketing since then of making a lot of money to the number one reason why people now enroll, according to this study, in post-secondary education,
as
opposed to giving back, reaching, making a difference. So it's a lofty idea, empathy, but I think people can experience it and they know what it means. And the simple things is holding those doors open to being compassionate to strangers in a time of need, to volunteerism, to civic participation. It's something that's at the heart and soul of what makes our society work. And if that is so important and something that every, you know, political party should be talking about, every faith-based leader, every parent, it's a shame that we don't have that conversation nearly enough around empathy.
So as we let you go, I know our time with you here is running short, but what do you think is going on in the election this year? I know you're from Canada, but what do you make of the fact that young voters are disengaged this time around for the most part?
Well, although from Canada, I now spend most of my time in the States because we have offices for all of our programming in schools, and I do shake my head. I think that often when you find the pollsters and the pundits talking about the lack of engagement in their 18s and 20s, you see when there's a very captivating politician. You know, you saw it, obviously, what they call the Obama effect, that, you know, you saw a higher youth turnout. But even then, it wasn't that high. Putting things in perspective, our numbers aren't, you know, around 60, 70, 80% of society getting out there and voting. We're excited if you can break, you know, 30 in municipal elections percent people getting out. Like, this is a scary fact. And so I guess what leads to me is that we're having this conversation too late. That when we're pointing to this issue, you know, every 4 years and getting excited about, you know, voter turnout, we need to start asking in schools. We need to start having that conversation at the youngest of ages of how do we get youth interested in the world. We need to read the newspaper. We need to get youth out volunteering. We need to help them find their gifts that they can share with the world. And we see it. You know, whenever I'm in Wisconsin, you know, Atwood Community Center in Madison, the students there got involved. Badger Ridge Middle, you know, they helped adopt a village in China. Bayport High School in Green Bay does a brick by brick for East Africa. St. Mary's by the Lake in Racine reached out to Sri Lanka. Verona area, you know, reached out to Sierra Leone. These students do both local and global service. And we need to start asking is how do we get this in schools? How do we get this in families? And how do you get this at the youngest of ages, nurturing kids to get involved?
Well, thank you so much, Craig Kielbauer. It's really been a pleasure to have you on. I wish we had longer, but it's been great to have you for this morning.
Oh, truly my pleasure. Thank you.
Craig Kielbauer, our guest this morning. He's the author of The World Needs Your Kid, How to Raise Children Who Care and Contribute. And coming up next, we'll be joined by two students who are political activists at their college campus, Charlotte Evans and Justin Fons, both of them from Wisconsin. And we'll be happy to take some of your phone calls, too. What do you make of the low voter turnout among young adults, especially this time around? We saw a change in that at the 2008 election, but not so much this time. What do you think about that? And what do we need to do to get young people more involved in the political process and maybe just in the world around them, as our guest Craig Kielbauer was just saying? You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. And our email is talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert. I'm in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert, keeping you company this morning. I'm in today for Kathleen Dunn. And this morning, this hour, we're talking about the involvement of young people in the world around them. Specifically right now, for the rest of this hour, the election. We saw, of course, huge voter turnout in 2008. This year, though, we're seeing that more young adults are choosing to sit the election out. Maybe they're watching from the sidelines. Maybe they're actually not keeping up at all. There has been a rise in interest in the Republican Party, corresponding fall for Democrats, but there has not been the huge interest and momentum behind it that we saw previously. And we're wondering what's going on there, what's different this time, and what matters to young voters. And we're joined now by two guests from Wisconsin, Charlotte Evans, who is the state chair of the Wisconsin Federation of College Republicans. She's a junior majoring in physics at the University of Wisconsin River Falls. And also joining us is Justin Fons. He's a membership director of the College Democrats of Wisconsin and is a senior majoring in political science and public administration at the University of Wisconsin La Crosse. And I welcome both our guests, Charlotte and Justin. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And I want to ask you both how you got involved. You, of course, are kind of the poster children this hour of young people who are involved in the process. Charlotte, let's start with you. How did you get involved in politics?
Well, I've been involved in politics my entire life. My grandfather is the biggest owner of H. Tedder's and Sons Roofing Company out of Princeton, Wisconsin. And I guess just learning about all the taxes that he had to pay just to keep his business afloat, more than $1,000 a day to provide health insurance and other things, really made me interested in becoming politically involved so that way I could find a way to lower taxes so it wouldn't actually put so much strain on the individual business owner.
And what about you, Justin?
Well, listening to Craig in the last half hour, I realized that my parents really did do a pretty good job of raising me not to be a passive bystander. They've always, you know, kept me engaged in the issues, and we talked about it at the dinner table. It was not something that was taboo. Politics was always something that was on our minds, and especially after what I saw what happened in the 2000 election, that really drove me to get more involved in electoral politics. So in high school in 04, I helped out with the Kerry campaign, did some volunteering back in my area, and then when I got to college, it was just a natural fit that I would intern with campaigns and, you know, help out locally and see what I could do on that level.
So you both have been involved in politics for quite a while, even though, you know, you're on the younger side. And I wonder what you thought about the incredible response in the 2008 election of young people during that election. What did you make of that? Justin, we'll start with you.
Well, it was amazing. I mean, we've never seen such a swell of support from young people getting organized and getting their neighbors out to vote. And I think it was just a response to, you know, really what America needed at that time. I mean, the change we saw with Barack Obama, engaging young people, I mean, besides all the policy programs that he himself would bring, just the movement among young people was so valuable, and I think that was something we can hope to keep going after the momentum of 2008.
Well, putting the politics of it aside for a minute, what do you think it was that energized young people? It was as though Barack Obama had found the magic switch and they were there. What was it?
That's a good question. I mean, a lot of it probably has to do with, you know, the personality and just the energy that he brought to the campaign that was lacking in previous candidates. But he really awakened an energy that was there just waiting to be opened up by the right candidate.
And that energy is something that, you know, Republicans are hoping to tap into in these midterm elections. Charlotte, are you seeing that right now?
Oh, absolutely. Actually, we have been establishing statewide campaign weekends where we send different college Republicans from all over the state to go to different campuses and to different campaigns. And each one of these have resulted in great amount of voter turnout. It resulted in a lot of new volunteers. I have never seen so many young people willing to give up a Saturday and Sunday to spend time with a candidate and walk with them and make over 6 hours of phone calls in one day.
What do you think is going on with the fact that it is so hard to get young people out to vote? I mean, the fact that the last election was this huge blip on the radar instead of the norm, I guess, is what we should be talking about. Why do you think it's so hard to get young people involved in politics and maybe just in shaping the world around them, Charlotte?
Well, actually, I don't think that it is really a problem, especially with the conservative youth. We're actually having record turnout with everybody in the entire nation for college Republicans. We've had record amounts of sign-ups, we've had record amount of hours, and we've also had, for the first time, national commercials that have been going on the television. It's been overwhelming for us, and we've really ended up having a big step up from the previous times that we've had as college Republicans. I really think that as an organization, we're only getting stronger, and this election is really building up momentum. Actually, Wisconsin has over 1,300 hours logged of things that we've done just with campaign weekends. And I think that that's something that really says something about our organization, of how we're willing to give up our weekends and are willing to try to get out the vote. And we've had more first-timers than we've ever had in any other year helping us out with these campaign weekends.
That sounds encouraging, but it's still not established as the norm. We've still seen, even last year, when there were huge numbers as well, that was still far below the national average for voting. And I guess even though things are looking bright now, I wonder what people like you and the political game in general can do to get younger people involved. Justin.
I'm sorry, what was that?
I'm wondering what we can do to get younger people involved.
Well, a lot of it starts with education. Like Craig was talking about, it needs to be something that kids are interested in. They need to be engaged in the news and the world around them, and they need to, you know, we need to instill in them the sense that you need to care about these issues, even if they don't seem directly tied to what's going on right now, that it does affect you. I mean, the congressional race here over in the 3rd congressional district of Wisconsin, we have a clear choice between our candidate who's brought financial aid to the district and one who openly says he does not support such measures. So I think just bringing those messages down to the level of the students where they can really understand how it affects them and the consequences of not participating, I think we would see a lot more engagement.
Well, what issues are young people caring about this time around, Justin?
Well, on college campuses, as I've seen, the environment is definitely more of an issue with the young people than it is for the older generation. I mean, that's understandable because we're the ones who are going to be having to deal with the environment that we've got and have the most stake in cleaning it up. But, of course, jobs and the economy are on everyone's mind, whether it's, you know, your parents having a job now or you having a job when you get out of college in a year or 3 years. And, of course, the ever-increasing issue of the affordability of higher education is on students' minds. And a lot of the candidates are doing a good job of addressing that, but we just need to get that out to the students.
And, Charlotte, are those the same kinds of issues that you're seeing that Republicans, young Republicans, are interested in, or is there one that weighs out more than others?
Well, actually, what I would have to say is the way that we've been going about it with the college Republicans is putting things more into a term of what's going to happen in the future if this reckless spending is continued. We've been having commercials aired over at the University of Madison, which basically shows students that they will become the debt that Barack Obama and these reckless spenders are creating. We are trying to show the youth that by continuing on this charade of spending and cutting down on businesses and cutting down on the private sector, that they're going to end up coming into an area where they're not going to be able to have jobs, and their parents are going to be spending more money, and their education is most likely going to be leading them into debt that they may never be able to pay off because they won't be having the jobs that they're promised when they get out of college. The number one issue that we've been having with students is the fear that America isn't going to be great anymore because we're going to become second to China. We're going to be owing China so much money. And so we've been really focusing on educating other people that maybe may not be that politically aware of what's going on in this nation with the spending and with the fact that this job market and this economy is just so bad. And as he ended up saying, the environment is important to some Democrats and whatnot, but what we're really focusing on this election isn't reducing our carbon footprint, but our government footprint. We really want to show that limited government is the way to go, and that's the way that the college Republicans and other conservative youth are really looking at trying to target young voters.
We're talking this morning with Charlotte Evans, state chair of the Wisconsin Federation of College Republicans. She's a junior majoring in physics at UW-Madison, or rather UW-Wisconsin, River Falls. And also joining us is Justin Fons, membership director of College Democrats of Wisconsin, and he's a senior majoring in poli-sci and public administration at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. And we've been listening to them for the past 10 minutes, hearing what issues are important to young voters, what's going on in the election this time, and wondering what you think. Are young people involved enough in these midterm elections? You know, typically involvement does fall off for the midterm elections, but what do you make of what you're hearing and about how young people are a little bit less involved this time around, although Republicans have a surge of interest this time that was similar to the Democrats in 08. What do you think we need to do to get young people more involved in elections, in politics, and in being active in the world around them? Our number is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234, and our email is talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, and I'm in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay tuned to Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up today at 12:30, Jim Fleming reads from I Thought You Were Dead, a love story by Pete Nelson. For Paul, life is a series of obstacles to overcome. How he manages is the essence of the story. I'm Veronica Rickert, and I'm sitting in today for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we're talking about getting young people involved in the elections for the rest of this hour. We're joined by two political activists from the state of Wisconsin, the various couple colleges here in Wisconsin, Charlotte Evans from UW-River Falls and Justin Fons from UW-La Crosse. Both are involved in their respective parties at those college campuses. And we turn now to the phone calls. We've got Alan joining us from Appleton. Hi, Alan.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment to more about what Charlotte said. I kind of grew up kind of the same way. My grandfather was a town chairman where I grew up, and a farmer, which he had a weird, they had a very large farm before it ended up going to my uncle. And I kind of came in the same situation of the almost having things from one standpoint of republicanism. And now that I'm a business owner, I don't necessarily see things that same way. When I look at businesses, I don't think taxes on my business are necessarily that high. And I also think that we need to put people before we put before profits. I think that's more important. When we look at things the way things are, you know, you talk about health insurance. Health insurance is important. Health insurance for everyone is important. And I will take, that's just what I wanted to say, and I will take that off the air. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Alan. And Charlotte, did you want to respond to that?
Absolutely. I'd like to say that I totally agree that people come first. But, however, the difference between the college Republicans and the college Democrats is that the college Democrats generally think that the government should be providing some of these things, whereas we as Republicans believe in individual freedom, where the public, the private sector should be able to provide most of the things that the government does provide. For instance, I believe that there was a big problem with health care, but I don't think that a huge government intervention that takes almost a third of our income to be redoing the health care. I think instead the private sector should have been able to have some reforms and found a way to be able to change the health care system as it was instead of completely overhauling the best health care system in the nation, in the world.
Well, thank you for that call, Alan. And let's get another caller in on this. We've got Kim joining us from Madison. Hi, Kim.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say with Charlotte, she started with the $1,000 a day that her I think grandfather or father had to pay for health insurance. That's private health insurance. That's not public health insurance. So complaining about that as an issue doesn't it doesn't make sense. It's contradictory. But more importantly, I think that young people are more political today than they ever have been. Whether you vote or not is another question. I think people wanted Barack Obama to do some very specific things, i.e. national health care, ending the war in Iraq and in Afghanistan, and in really creating a system where health care, education, and housing were all affordable. And since those things were really not done, people feel very, very frustrated and very let down. So for me, really, I think young people are more political. They're just sort of disgusted with the fact that, you know, the Republicans, who are now sort of using this economic crisis to whip up bigotry against poor people and against minorities especially, and the Democrats, who have not stood up and done the right thing and fought for health care and fought to end the wars, I think they're deciding to sit it out because they think that, those are the changes that need to be made, and those are not the changes that are being made. I really think young people believe and recognize that we're going to have to build something from the bottom up, and really the establishment as it is, Republican and Democrat, are not doing for them what they need. So I really do think young people have a lot of political understanding, and I don't think teaching them or telling them or telling them that information is necessary. I don't think we should talk down to young people. Mm-hmm. I think they have their own very good ideas, and they're pretty serious ideas.
All right. Well, thank you, Kim. And let's, Alan, I'm sorry, Justin, what do you think about that? Is Kim right? Are people just disillusioned about what happened in the last election, but they're politically aware, they're just not voting?
Well, I definitely think there's some of that, but to a greater extent, I think she is right that students are more politically aware, but a lot of them just do, you know, don't really want a part of the two-party system anymore. They're tired of the you know, bickering between the two parties in Washington, and that's understandable. But I guess the solution isn't not to vote and not participate in the system. We just need to get the message out there that, you know, to fix the system, you need to be part of the system.
Why would people not vote if they're politically aware, as Kim says?
Well, I guess part of that just might be a disdain for having to choose between the two candidates that perhaps their ideals don't align with. But, you know, the perfect being the enemy of the good. We'd like to see people getting out there and supporting the candidates who more closely support or align with their views rather than just washing their hands of it entirely.
Well, thank you for calling, Kim. We appreciate your call. And another call here from Sheila, calling us from Wrightstown. Hey, Sheila.
Hello. I guess basically I just wanted to say that I think part of the reason why you get low voter turnout right now is because we're not voting for a president. And I do think that voters of all ages get out more to vote for presidents than they do in the midterm elections. But secondly, I wanted to comment that I believe that generally young people tend to be more liberal. We kind of come into this world with ideals, and we feel that things should be a certain way. There's more concern about equity and fair and more of the liberal views. And I do think that those things start to change a little bit as we age. And I believe that that is why you get a much bigger voter turnout when Barack Obama was running, because there were a lot of young people who felt that they wanted to see him as president because of he followed their ideals. But I think that when it comes time to vote for the next president, if the forerunner is a good Republican, you're going to see a big change in that.
Hmm. Interesting thoughts. Well, thank you, Sheila. And Charlotte, what do you think?
Well, just to go back to the last caller, then this one also, I guess the difference with this election is the fact that a lot of people are getting sick and tired of the same old politician, and this is why the Tea Party movement has been so successful. People are tired of seeing politicians come in, so asking for average Joe to come in and run. Kurt Schuller is a perfect example. A guy who has never ran for office before is running for treasurer, and he wants to change the system from the inside out. And I think that that's really the difference between this midterm election and other midterm elections, where people are actually having the opportunity to vote for people that are going to try to overhaul the system and try to fix it. And I do agree that sometimes the youth are generally more liberal, but at the same time, I think that the main reason why people are not much voting in this midterm election may be because of the fact that there's not the president's race. But I do think that we might have more people than we're expecting to have vote just for the sheer fact that we do have a competitive Senate race and also a competitive governor's race.
And Justin, what do you think about Sheila's comments? Do you think that it's true that young people are more liberal naturally?
I think the tendency is for, you know, younger people to be more liberal for a number of reasons. I mean, she sort of touched on the fact that idealism is more instilled in us, and it hasn't faded yet. But also, just the rational basis for it is there. We're less economically well off. We have more of an interest in you know, promoting the public good and ensuring that government is able to take care of the people that aren't able to take care of themselves, as well as, like I said, a concern for the future, for the environment, which obviously the Democratic Party has taken more of a leadership stand on rather than the Republicans in action on the environment.
And another caller here, we have Drew joining us from Rochester. Hey, Drew.
Hi. I just wanted to add to the conversation. I feel like it's kind of hard for young people today to see how their votes turn into change, because the system, the two-party system that Kim and Justin talked about earlier, touched on the bickering between the two parties and how that might be turning off young voters. I think it is. I think it's how when they're faced with either, you know, a college Republican or a college Democrat, a society to join to try and get their voice heard or to try to affect political change, it's hard to see how their views, which are somewhere in the middle, might actually work their way through the system. Because you have, by the time you elect a wide variety of Democratic or Republican candidates, or try and cast your vote to elect them, by the time they get into their new job and get into their system, it seems like the purposes that you voted for them for might become diluted to the point where you're not really seeing the change you were looking for because of their subscription to whatever party things they feel like they need to get done. And so I think it's particularly hard for young voters who are in college and who are seeing things more in kind of a very complicated, who are coming up with a new complicated way of looking at the world and looking at a lot of problems every day in their studies that are very grayscale to accept this black and white point of view that the parties espouse.
Drew, do you think you're saying that young people, young voters, are more disillusioned than older voters, or just maybe that there's a generational difference?
I think there are a lot of optimistic young people as well, but I think it is easy for young people to get disillusioned by the difficulty from their point of view of affecting change through the current system.
And Justin, what do you think about Drew's comments?
Well, I think it's something we all face. I mean, changing the political atmosphere isn't easy, and it's not something that, you know, one person or one group or even, you know, one party can do. It's got to be something that happens on the whole. But speaking to sort of the disillusionment that some people feel about their elected officials, that when they get elected, they don't vote how they promised in the campaign, but rather with their party. I think that's something I hear a lot from students on campus when we're talking to them about the importance of the election. They just don't seem to think it's that important or that their votes will really matter. But as a political science student, I know it's very tough to get out the message of political efficacy and having the notion that your vote does matter. And I just hope that students will try it regardless to make that change and have some faith in the system.
And Charlotte, do you think that students, at least what you're seeing, are they not at that point Drew was talking about? Are they still optimistic that their vote can make a difference and that their view can work its way through the political process?
I really think that the youth, are, at least here, that are conservative, believe that their votes do matter. I mean, just look at what happened with the Tea Party votes over in Kentucky with Rand Paul. It's the Tea Party that ended up voting, and they ended up swinging the vote 180 degrees. It wasn't expected to go that way. I think that it's not only the youth that are disillusioned with politicians, it's the fact that everyone is. And it's kind of affecting everyone. I think that the main problem that people have been having is the fact that they've been lied to this whole time. And one of the first political elections I was able to vote in was the presidency. And I feel like I've been lied to with not only Barack Obama, but other people that I voted for as well. Either they did nothing or did nothing that they promised that they were going to do, or they're doing the complete opposite. And I guess with the fact that we do have this Tea Party movement and some candidates coming out of the blue like Sharon Engel, we really do think that our votes can matter and that we do need to get out the vote. We have people that are excited to come out, and we actually have people that are walking around all the time handing out pizza magnets for Scott Walker or even asking people about their opinions. There's always some sort of moderated speech that's going on campus, whether it be college Republicans or college Democrats here. We've had Senator Feingold. We've had Ron Kahn come up and visit for a while. And those were always very well attended, whether it be by Republicans or Democrats. Sure, we might be disillusioned, but we're excited to get people out of office and try to get improve people that are actually going to do what they promised to get in. And I really think this is the one election that Republican youth are actually really energized for.
I'm just curious, Charlotte, did you say that they feel lied to or I felt lied to about Barack Obama? I'm just trying to find out whether you voted for Barack Obama last time around.
What did you say?
I'm asking whether you voted for Barack Obama last time around.
Absolutely not.
No, okay. I thought I heard that maybe you said I felt lied to by him.
I feel like I got lied to because mm-hmm. He's a promising bipartisanship. He ended up promising that he was going to go out and try to have make sure that there's people on both parties to make sure that everything is very moderate. And even though I didn't vote for him, I still felt as though he was lying to the entire country. The fact that he's using reckless spending, trying to overhaul health care, trying to overhaul with everything else in the public sector. I mean, putting everything into the government sector and not the private sector.
Let me just get another phone call, and we're running out of time here. We've got Rich joining us from Cumberland. Hi, Rich.
Hi. Just a couple of comments, I guess. I don't know if it's so much disillusionment as it is feeling disenfranchised, just not young voters, but all voters. And then another thing too, all these candidates, they make all these promises, and then once they have to get to work, and they, I don't see how anybody can expect them to keep any of them, because they have to come to consensus with all the other politicians. And then that I don't know that young people as well as older voters understand that stuff, it sometimes takes more than 2 years to really have any good change. And we live in a society, you know, where we think everything should just happen right now, and it just doesn't work that way. Anyway, that's my comment.
All right. Well, thank you, Rich. Justin, we'll let you take a swing at that. Rich talking about whether or not young people feel actually disenfranchised, not disillusioned, and whether they're too impatient for the change that, I guess, Barack Obama in this case was talking about.
Well, I echo the caller's sentiment for that it does take patience, and that change doesn't happen overnight.
And we've got about 30 seconds, by the way. I'm sorry.
I'm very happy to see the change that we have accomplished in the past 2 years, getting landmark health care reform passed, even without the cooperation of the Republican Party. And I just wanted to, you know, in response to the caller, say that, you know, hopefully we will get the message out to students that that change is coming, that we need their continued support to keep moving forward and not to cut it short and keep on in the movement.
Well, I want to thank you both so much for your time this morning and for being involved in the process and sharing your insights with us. So thank you to Charlotte Evans, State Chair of the Wisconsin Federation of College Republicans at UW-River Falls. And thank you to Justin Fons, Membership Director of the College Democrats of Wisconsin at UW-La Crosse. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
I'm Veronica Rickert with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay tuned. There is more coming up. Next hour, we talk scary reads on Wisconsin Public Radio.